Several local races are headed to a May runoff election. This morning, we continue our conversations with the candidates. Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, can he unseat popular incumbent Tommy Hazzouri? We speak with City Council candidate Greg Rochelle, and we take your calls, too. What are your concerns and questions about this runoff? Where do you want the candidates to stand? Give us a call, 549-2937. Then later, it's our First Coast Connect book club today with host Stacey Goldring. Plus, it's no trivial matter as a local podcast takes off around the world. A few questions with Trivial Warfare host Jonathan Oakes. He'll put us to the test. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, several local races are headed to a runoff election in May. That's because the candidates still on the ballot didn't clear that 50% plus one threshold in the March city elections. We've been profiling the at-large city council races this spring as we host the candidates asking for your vote in the runoff. And we're continuing our conversations with the candidates right now as we welcome Greg Rochelle. He's the Republican candidate for the Jacksonville City Council at-large Group 3. His opponent, incumbent and former mayor Tommy Hazzouri. What's at stake in this race? Let's find out. Greg Rochelle, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here, Melissa.
And there is a May runoff election in these at-large city council races and some district races, too. You have to go out and vote again, people. Right now, you can learn more about this candidate. What are your questions for Greg Rochelle? Give us a call right now. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And let us know your thoughts on Facebook as well. All right, Greg, thanks for being with us. First off, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to run.
Well, thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to say that, you know, I've lived in Jacksonville for about 30 years now. I'm from a large family, 9 out of Central Louisiana.
Where were you in the birth order?
I'm number 4
Middle of the pack.
In the middle of the pack. And I went to the military. I left the military. I left that small city to go to the military. That was my way out for going to college and things of that nature. So I'm a veteran. I'm a veteran of 2 branches of service, United States Marine Corps and United States Air Force. I worked in law enforcement when I was in the military, and I've worked since for a large company here in Jacksonville, UPS, for 22 years.
Right. Recently retired from UPS. You've got grown children. And so why run for office? What are the issues you think matter in this race?
Well, there are a lot of issues that matter in this race. And why, first of all, let's talk about why we would want. I think that our city is an opportunity to grow. It's on its way. It's moving up. It's doing some wonderful things here. But we also need to make sure that our leadership has a fresh perspective of where we want to go and what we want to do. I think that that's one of the things that I want to first look at. Of course, when we talk about some of the things that I think that's on everyone's mind, we talk about crime, we talk about, you know, jobs and safe neighborhoods and a few other things that are out there, you know, just things that would promote our city and take us to the next level.
How would you address the crime rate if you were elected to the Jacksonville City Council? What would you do that they're not currently doing?
Well, I think crime, as we know, has been around for a long time. It's in the major cities everywhere. But I think that you approach crime through the broken theory, the broken window theory. You know, you start to look at the areas that have some issues. You start cleaning up those areas. You offer opportunities within those areas. And then you also get your law enforcement engaged in those areas with a little more community policing instead of just kind of taking care of issues for as they are need.
How would you pay for initiatives like that? And do you think the city needs a dedicated funding source dedicated exclusively to crime reduction? The kinds of initiatives that were begun in the John Payton era, the Jacksonville Journey era, but that have since lost funding.
Well, I do believe that there needs to be a dedicated source of funding for those programs that we identify, but the programs need to be effective. For as when we look at the sheriff, and I do Sheriff Mike Williams, I think his job and his group are doing an excellent job, But they are receiving upwards of $400 million, in that dollars are used for programs, and they're also used for equipment and technology. But we got to step away from that and then go back to what we call community policing again to make sure that the people are interacting fairly with cops.
Okay, how will you as a city council member bring about better community policing? And what about the JSO's contention that they already do that? Are you saying that you don't think they're doing an adequate job of community policing?
Well, I like I said, I was in the military. I served in law enforcement. I served law enforcement, even though it's a smaller community, it's certainly a much larger. But the basics is still there. And no, I don't say that they don't. I just need to think that they should bring it up and step it up a little bit. You don't want cops, police officers or law enforcement officers going into neighborhoods where people are fearful or don't want to talk or don't want to share with it. So you do that by getting out of the cars and meeting with the small business owners and understanding the faith-based businesses and things like that so that we can get where we need to go.
It's 549-2937 as we speak with City Council candidate Greg Rochelle. He faces Tommy Hazzouri in a May runoff in an at-large city council race. Okay, you're a Republican. You're running against Tommy Hazzouri, popular Democrat in town, perhaps the Democrat in this county with the highest name recognition of anyone, with a D behind his name. He did not clear the 50% threshold in March. Another Democrat on the ballot took a big chunk of votes away from him. He got more votes than you, but he didn't clear the threshold. So you now go against him in this runoff. You're a Republican. He's a Democrat. Some have theorized that he might have lost some Democratic support because of his vocal support for Mayor Curry, a Republican. He appeared in television ads with the mayor in March. You are calling for more aggressive community policing. It sounds to me as though you're saying the police could be doing a better job. That's not something you often hear from a Republican candidate, I have to say. So if you're elected to city council, will you be a reliable vote for Mayor Curry on the council, whether it's issues of public safety or other issues? Or do you see yourself as perhaps a more independent voice on the Republican side when it comes to issues of justice, crime and punishment, taxation? You're saying you think an independent funding source for anti-crime initiatives is a good idea. We haven't heard that from a lot of the other Republican candidates either. So how do you style yourself as a Republican in this race?
Well, let me step back, and that's a lot you just put on my plate here.
Yes, I know.
Let me step back. I'd say, first of all, I think the sheriff and the police department are doing an excellent job. Let me not take that away from that. I believe that they're doing an excellent job. I just think that we can expand that a little bit. So I don't want it to be said that I don't. I do. When it comes to Tommy Hazzouri, who's been around for a long time, or my opponent, who's been around for a long, long time, and he's been around since 1974. And I'd ask the audience, what do you think? Where were you at in 1974? You know, gas was 38 cents and President Nixon was in style. But the thing is that why challenge someone like that? Well, Helen Keller once says life is a daring adventure or nothing at all. So I think we have to go. From the Republican side, I'm trying to answer all your questions here. From the Republican side, you know, I respect the mayor and Tommy Hazzouri. Certainly Tommy Hazzouri's been around for a while, and he has done some things that are important. But when it comes to actually doing things that we need to do, it's time to have a new perspective, you know. He did talk about the tolls. He did talk about fresh air, but he did also introduce a garbage tax once, and he also introduced a tax of pension that still is going to be here and is going to be effective in 14 years. As far as the mayor is concerned, I mean, the mayor—
Were you against the half-cent sales tax to deal with the city's pension obligations?
Well, I think that you have to do something, but kicking the football down the 14 years, I think that was a little too much. I mean, the person—
What would have been a better solution?
Well, don't really understand everything about the better solution, but I do not believe that 14 years would have been a better solution. I didn't have the privilege of having that information with me, so I'd had to look over it, but I do believe that the people who are going to pay for it are some of them yet unborn.
Is it difficult running as a Republican when your opponent, the Democrat, is expected to get the mayor, the Republican mayor's support in this race?
It is.
He's seen as an ally of the mayor.
It is difficult, but I believe that that the citizens would want something new and do want something new, and they want a fresh perspective when it comes to legislation and opportunity. After work, I am a commissioner. I've worked at taxation, revenue, and utilization, so I do understand the fundamentals of dollars in, dollars out. I also worked as human resources, so I understand certain things about people and the concept of people and what the city wants and what people want.
It's 549-2937. What are your questions for City Council candidate Greg Rochelle? He's heading into a May runoff with Tommy Hazzouri. We'll host Councilman Hazzouri on Thursday. For now, though, we want your conversations and questions for Greg Rochelle. 549-2937. This is a citywide race. Anyone can vote in this. Anyone can call. Bruce in Atlantic Beach. Hey, Bruce, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
I'd like to get this gentleman's take on his Republican support for Trump. Does he support his behavior and his moral standing with the way he's emboldened a younger generation to behave?
Thanks for that, Bruce. Okay. All right. This is a local race. We primarily ask candidates about local issues, but what about the standard bearer for your party, President Trump? How do you feel he's affected the GOP's fortunes or challenges here in Florida? And what do you think about him?
Well, as a former military person, we always look to our commander in chief, whether he's Democrat or Republican. I would say stay off the Twitter. But for most people,
you're not a fan of his tweets.
And I think that most people are not a fan of the tweets. But overall, I think he has done a great job in doing some things, especially in the business arena.
He's filed for bankruptcy six times. He's being investigated for possible money laundering, other financial crimes. How is he a great businessman?
Well, I'm not saying that he's a great businessman. I said he's done great for business. I mean, we're looking at the new tax where we're actually taking our standard and taking it up to another $12,000, which for families is important. From a personal perspective, I can't speak to that on his background and his business perspective of that, but I'm talking about for people.
So you think he's been good for the economy?
I think he's been good for the economy.
Okay. And again, like it's not an issue that's come up a lot in these local races, but certainly we're in a very divisive period in our politics right now. And so as you run citywide, and you're again, not getting the support of Mayor Curry, he will be supporting your opponent. What's your strategy to reach out to moderate and independent voters who will probably decide this race? It'll be a low turnout race. What's your message to them?
Well, first of all, you know, running a grassroots campaign, you know, you have to go back to the organic group of trying to do that. It's hard to break into politics when you're brand new. It's just hard. And the popular people with popular names and the popular always get more of a favor. And that's okay, I guess, in some areas. But there is a group of people out there, citizens, I should say, who are encouraged that there can be something new and something fresh and something better. And so I simply say what my father used to say, you know, grass takes root, it grows. Cows eat grass grows. Cows eat grass, they create milk, they provide strongness for people. We're just going to go back to grassroots. That's what we want.
So as a group one at large city councilman, if you're elected, your constituents would be across Duval County, different needs in different parts of the city. Now, you mentioned crime as your overriding concern. What are the other big issues that you think are most important for voters in Duval right now?
Well, I believe that, again, crime or public safety is important. I do say that. But I like the jobs and the community from my HR experience. I think that once we start to bring jobs into the community, that's important. I think that not only that we're bringing jobs, we want to make sure that we look at downtown development, but we want to also include the small businesses once the downtown development starts. So we don't want to leave that out either.
Where are you on plans to demolish the Jacksonville Landing? The city council approved that plan, although there's been some pushback from the community.
Well,
how do you feel about the current trend of demolishing downtown buildings as part of an overall downtown development strategy?
Well, I think that we should always develop. That's important to develop. But it's also good to preserve some of our history and things if we can remodel or repurpose those buildings. I would love to see that we take another approach to that, to some. I think that when we're looking at cities throughout our country, we have development and we have repurposing. And I'd like to see both.
So you're okay, though, with the landing being raised?
The landing, you know, is a unique situation. Everyone here would agree that it's unique. I'm not so sure that I would have voted for that, but I'm an independent thinker anyway. I do believe that the person who won was certainly, and deservedly too, was the owner of the landing, because I think he's kind of got moved around a lot, but certainly...
Tony Slaman, you think he got jerked around? Is that... You're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, you know, and that's business and politics. So I'm not going to say that. I just think that the landing certainly was it's a landmark. It's a place that we have. It's history. It's iconic. I certainly see it go. I would hope that we could repurpose it for something that the citizen would enjoy.
It's 549-2937 as we speak with council candidate Greg Rochelle. He's running against Tommy Hazzouri. This goes to a May runoff. We are hosting as many of these runoff candidates as we can before the May runoff election. Lois is in Jacksonville. Hey, Lois, good morning. Go ahead.
How are you?
Okay, thanks.
Yes. My question is, where does the candidate stand on the sale or not the sale of the JEA?
Thanks for that question. Okay, there was a push last year to privatize JEA. It did not succeed. The public rose up pretty loudly against it. If that should come around again before the council, where would you stand on that?
Well, I think that anytime we have assets, we don't sell assets. I'm sure that I would agree with a percentage. I think it was 70% of the city was in disagreement of selling, so I would stand with them on that.
Okay. Then that kind of begs a follow-up question. As I said earlier, your opponent, Tommy Hazzouri, has allied himself with Mayor Curry. He's expected to get the mayor's support in this runoff. Politics can sometimes make strange bedfellows. As we see two men from opposing political parties working together, Mayor Curry certainly would like to see a supermajority on the city council, 13 votes to approve his priorities in his second term. For people that support the mayor, they want to know if you'll be a reliable vote for the mayor. For people that don't like Mayor Curry, they're wondering if you might show independent thinking and vote against him on issues like this. So how will you thread that needle as a Republican if you're elected? Would you depart from the mayor on some of these key issues?
Well, I certainly support the mayor on things that I think need supporting. We work with the mayor, but not for the mayor. I do want to bring an independent. There's a contingency that says, you know, we have to have independent thinkers. The mayor's an executive position and the council's legislation. So we need to make sure that they work in unison with each other, but don't just do a rubber stamp.
Do you think the council, as it's currently been constituted, has been too much of a rubber stamp for Mayor Curry?
Well, most of the times, the mayor said himself, it's, you know, my council gives me most of the time 19. I'm not opposed to the mayor. I think he's doing some great job. Things down there, I really support the mayor in many, many, many ways. But I just think, like my father and my values, you know, when two people always agree, one is not needed. So we always need to make sure that we have people who are willing to stand up and take it. You know, the very fact that I'm going up against a former former mayor, that's a rough road. But listen, I don't mind standing up. That alone proves where I stand.
549-2937. Tom is on the west side. Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Ah, good morning to you. You've asked most of the questions I wanted to ask. Doing an excellent job this morning. So I'll just repeat. What would be his highest priorities? I'd want to know what he wants to tackle first.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Greg?
Well, I think that, again, I feel that we have to go back to that broken theory system that we have.
The broken window theory?
Broken window theory, where we're looking at, two blocks from downtown, we have homelessness. We have to clean up some areas and do some areas out there. And I think that I feel that the people are wanting to see that happen, taking away some of the abandonment, fixing up the buildings or repurposing the buildings would certainly do that. So to answer his question is, I simply think that small businesses in our Jacksonville area and doing the broken theory repurposing is what we need to do.
What would you say to those who in recent years have sort of debunked the broken window theory of criminology, crime prevention, community policing? They have held that while on the surface it may seem to reduce crime rates, and in fact it has reduced crime rates, on the other hand, it has sometimes led to controversial policies like stop and frisk in New York and other cities, which critics call an erosion of civil liberties. And JSO has certainly faced that kind of criticism, too, at times, for overly aggressive policing, racial profiling, and the kinds of tactics that have become a flashpoint of criticism for law enforcement all over America. What about that side of it?
Well, I believe that, again, that, you know, with education, with opportunities, with things that are available to our community, whether in the downtown area or the local areas that surround it, I believe that we can accomplish a lot. The broken theory window, as you very well know, was a simple thing that can be misused. But certainly we want to make sure that we use it in a proper method, whether it's allowing for growth or whether it's allowing for opportunities. I don't know exactly other than that where we're looking at zoning policies or you said stop and frisk. I'm not into the profiling of police officers. I think that there's a better way that we can do that with our citizens. But the zoning certainly has something to do with how we do and allowing growth in
the
small
zoning
business.
Tell me more about how you would handle those issues. Certainly the way the council approaches LUS, land use and zoning, is a matter of great interest and sometimes controversy. How areas are zoned for development, who gets the money, who gets the preferences. What about all of that? Now we're kind of getting into a different area.
The zoning, when I was speaking of zoning, I was going back to small businesses. When you're looking at developing businesses downtown, it's important to have some zoning so that you can kind of move small business in it because they become the central part of who we are as a community. I'd love to see them able to go into some of the newer buildings, the bigger buildings, or the smaller buildings, so that they can kind of have an intermixed with downtown.
We hear a lot about that and how difficult it is for small business owners to navigate the red tape and bureaucracy that is in their path if they want to do something like that.
It is.
As a city official, how would you address that?
Well, first of all, I'd start looking and studying and reading up on it. Right now, I've worked in corporate America, so it kind of translates, but not quite the same. So I have to go in and do the study and do the follow-up and understand it so that I can help implement. But our overall reaching objective would be to make sure that we get proper zoning and kind of cut back on the bureaucracy of it.
Okay, let's go to Isla Ray in Riverside. Isla Ray, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just have a question, being in Riverside with the flooding that we experienced and knowing how it really destroyed the north side. The riverkeeper has really pushed their concern regarding the dredging of the St. John's River, and candidates from District 14 really stood by saying, all four of them, five of them, I think, said they believed in mitigation. So I was wondering if this gentleman could explain to us what his stand on mitigation for all the dredging that is occurring and how he prioritizes that.
Okay.
And what does it look like? What does mitigation look like to him?
Thank you for that. Let me ask you, too, as a related question to Isla Rae's. When we talk about flooding, the dredging project, the vulnerabilities Jacksonville will have to future storms and flooding, will you sign the St. John's Riverkeeper Resiliency Pledge as a candidate for public office, pledging to commit the city more robustly to resiliency and adaptation and mitigation efforts to protect the city from sea level rise and flooding in future years?
Well, certainly that's a concern as we move forward into the future, the resiliency program. I do believe
that's the thing, though. There is no resiliency program. Well, there is no resiliency officer for the city of Jacksonville. There is no program. There is no there's a state mandated working group on flooding that has done a little work. But beyond that, there is no program.
Well, to stand correct on that, what we're talking about is, when I say program, is that we're looking into that. Everyone from the Riverkeeper to preservation groups, and certainly places like San Marco and Riverside, they're all aware of this program, not program, but this need. I keep calling it program. Need.
Yeah.
Need. I think that when it comes to mitigation and the Riverkeeper and the river and the city and all that, I think we got to work hand in hand with that. I think that there should be some set asides for some mitigation. I think that, you know, we've got to be protective of our river streams and tributaries. I do believe that we still have to do the dredging, and we still have to make sure that happens. It's already in place right now. The Army Corps of Engineers already is dredging.
And they've already started. And that gets to her question, Isla Rae's question. Since it's already a fact on the ground or in the water, what is the city going to do to mitigate against the long-term impacts expected by that dredging? And would you sign the resiliency pledge?
Well, certainly.
Would you take that pledge?
Certainly, I'll take a look at it. I haven't read that in its entirety, but I'm certainly pro in preserving the river. I am a pro of that, but I'm also a pro, and I don't want to sound like a flip-flop, but I am a pro on growth and development. I just think that we need to come together and put something in writing that will protect the river but still allow for growth.
Okay. Let me ask you as a final question. This runoff is in May. It's a low turnout election. It'll be even lower than the March elections were. What's your final message to the voters to get them out to the polls and to make sure that they cast a ballot in these citywide races?
Well, certainly I appreciate being here, Melissa. I really do appreciate it. One of the things that we want to do is, it is a low turnout. I think the expectation is somewhere between 9% and 11%. Some people even think that there is no election. You have a civic right, a duty to go out and find a person that will represent you and do the things that you need done. And so I would certainly suggest that you do your homework. It's out there. It's available. A radio station is certainly a great opportunity, but it's not the final part of it. You need to go do your homework and decide who you would feel more comfortable in that seat, and understand that we're moving in a new direction and we need to have something new. I'd love to have you vote. My name is Greg Rochelle, and I'd love to have you vote. And my phone number's on my website. Certainly give me a call if you have any questions that I didn't answer or you weren't clear where I stood. I'd love to do that. I'd love to be able to reach out to you.
Greg Rochelle, thanks for being with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Join WJCT and PNC Grow Up Great to celebrate Be My Neighbor Day, Saturday, May 11th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the WJCT Studios. Meet Daniel Tiger, Katarina Kitty Cat, and their friends. Tour TIAA Bank Field, meet community helpers, face painters, enjoy local food trucks, arts and crafts, and so much more. Reserve your spot today for this free, family-friendly community event by visiting wjct.org. Start something good in your neighborhood.
I'm David Luckin, inviting you to listen to the Electro Lounge for the best down-tempo and new jazz at 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday nights, only on 89.9 FM, WJCT.
This book club segment is underwritten by San Marco Books and More.
Welcome back. We're talking books on the show this morning as we delve into the pages of The Cat's Table by author Michael Ondaatje. He's also famous for writing The English Patient. Remember that movie? Stacey Goldring is our book club leader, and she's here now with more about this month's pick, The Cat's Table. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm well. So you're reading The Cat's Table in your book club. You have more than one book club around town, including one that you lead at our sponsor, San Marco Books and More. Why is your pick The Cat's Table this month?
Well, you know, we like to live on the edge. The entire world is reading Where the Crawdad Sings, and I completely endorse that. But of course, we read books about the mafia and then obscure books like this.
Okay. So this is a little more obscure.
Yeah. But The Cat's Table was very interesting. First of all, the title intrigued me. The Cat's Table is the place where you sit if you're on a cruise ship and you're furthest away from the captain's table.
Interesting.
Right.
And so that's the bad table.
That's where I would be. So this is the table where, you know, if you didn't know someone, this is where you'd end up. And this is a completely imaginary term that the author overheard someone saying this and used this as a seed of a story.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Right. So it's a story about a young boy in the 1950s who travels from Ceylon or Sri Lanka to England alone on a ship. So it's his crazy adventures, and some of these adventures affect his entire life. The ship is a metaphor for leaving childhood and entering adolescence by the time we get to England. So it captures that in-between spot, the first time you interact with adults, the first time your world is not completely child-centric, you know.
And why is he on the ship all alone?
Because his parents are divorced, and he's going to live with his mother in England.
I see.
Yeah, so that's the premise.
So a little different than just being driven across town to the other parent.
Right.
He's actually crossing the world
and
alone on
right,
a ship.
Right, and it's autobiographical in a way. In fact, I had to look it up to make sure I didn't ask people to read a memoir, but it is autobiographical because our author went through the same thing. Mm. He, at the age of 11, was put on a ship, the Oronce, which really existed, and he makes this trip halfway around the planet, unchaperoned. And he decided to write about the story because when he was telling his kids, this is what I did when I was little, when I was 11, they looked at him and thought, are you insane? That really happened to you?
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. So
you'd be arrested today if you put your child unchaperoned on a ship.
Exactly. And so he thought, okay, I think I'll use this as, you know, the idea for a book. So you never know where you're going to get your ideas. The book is a combination of Eastern and Western storytelling. And if anyone has read Salman Rushdie's Midnight's Children, they'll know what I mean when I say it's crazy town when you open the book. There is every single character. There is every crazy thing happening. We're not necessarily following a timeline. It's episodic and fragmented. And he uses bits of the truth, like I told you, this really happened to him. The schools that he mentions in Ceylon, Sri Lanka, and that he mentions in England really exist. So you think you're reading something real. The author calls these red herrings of authenticity and the aura of reality. So once he has you hooked, it's completely a fictional journey. And that's fabulous writing. So he says he uses these author's weapons in order to draw the reader in. And he also uses the Tamil or Eastern tradition of storytelling. And I can sum that up in a quote that he shared. a thousand lies are worth more than one fact.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that beautiful? A thousand lies are worth more than one fact. And this is what he uses for his fictional writing. So I just thought it's a beautiful read. It takes us out of our comfort zone. It lets us explore places where we've never gone. We go through Port Said. We go through the Suez Canal. We're on the Mediterranean. We're in the Indian Ocean. And we are exposed to a myriad of characters in which we learn in each little episode, we learn a little bit more about life.
And it's timely, too, given that there's this intense, contentious debate in our country right now over immigration.
And this is
the story of an immigrant. He's traveling from his home, Sri Lanka, to England. He is experiencing the immigrant story.
Exactly. And our author calls himself a mongrel. He was born in Ceylon, which becomes Sri Lanka. He's born there. He goes to England for his formative years, learning in the English schools. He eventually ends up in Canada, which is also reflected in the story. So when I ask you, Melissa, and I know it's in proper English, but where are you from?
Yeah.
How one answers that, I have found through my book groups thus far, depends on A, who's asking the question, what the context is, and why. So when I ask you where you're from and you say Dayton, maybe that's because you know we're both from Ohio. But if I were, you know, at a, you know, Ohio State reunion and you popped in and you may say, well, you know, I went to Northwestern. You know, so it, you know, we get to be creative. And on the ship, when we ask where we're from, each of the characters, their identity and who they choose to be and what you choose to present. You know, when you go on vacation, you could be anyone you want.
Sure.
And some of the characters do that. And although I've explained that the story is episodic and, you know, something happens here, something happens there, there is a thread throughout the story where we do get to see the identity of each of these people, most of them anyway, and how they tie into a story, because there is a plot and it involves a prisoner who's taken on deck only late at night, and you hear his chains as he walks across the deck. And our main character, named Mina, like a Mina bird, and his two friends that he meets on the ship, they watch the stranger. And you know, when you're a little kid, you'll make up anything. You know, you have your whole narrative going. So they want to know about the stranger. And they wake up early in the morning and they steal food off of the first class passengers' smorgasbord, and they eat them in one of the life rafts, and they spy on people. And they watch a little girl who roller skates around the deck each morning. And, you know, all these little tidbits are taking place. They make friends with a botanist who's at the cat's table. They make friends with a musician at the cat's table who teaches them songs, and some of them have bad language. So, you know, it's just these
This is all seen through the eyes of a child. You know, it's so funny to me because I was reading a piece, it was for parents, about how important it is to make sure your children, when they're growing up, have these kinds of travel adventures on their own, whether mm-hmm. it's a summer camp,
right,
a visit to the grandparents without mom and dad, mm-hmm. or whatever it is, that when you're a child and you go somewhere without your parents, the memories and the experiences you have from those times are so incredibly vivid, because you're, as you said, you're in the adult world and you're fending for yourself. And these are formative experiences for kids, which is why so many parents send their kids to a 6-week summer camp. Even though it seems like a really long time for a kid to be away, they come back experiencing unbelievable growth, and they carry with them these memories that are really intense. And I think back to my own childhood, those few times I did that with, I was somewhere without my parents, I remember those so much more vividly.
Exactly. And why is that? Because when we're away from our parents, we are the governor of our own identity. We don't have anyone presenting, filtering, censoring. It's us. We are in charge. We are the head of our own pack. And to be able to have that, you know, and today it's hard to be disconnected from your parents because of technology, which is, it's a shame, because, you know, if you go for 2 or 3 weeks and you don't have any connection with your parents, you have to make decisions for yourself.
Yeah.
You have judgments that you need to make and rely on your own wit. So important and unfortunately so lacking today. So any parent out there, like I know what I'm talking about, any parent out there who is worried when your child doesn't call every day or you don't check in every other day, you know, that may be the best thing. It may be the best thing.
It's good for them. And so obviously Anjate's memories of his own cruise were intense enough to spark this wonderful book, The mm-hmm. Cat's Table. And how have your book clubs, your actual physical book clubs, reacted to it?
Well, I was pleasantly surprised because it was an overwhelmingly positive experience. Challenging, yes, because of the storytelling. You're going back and forth in time. You're following a narrator who's reflecting back on his 21-day experience on the Oronce, and he is now in present-day Canada thinking, should I write a book about my experience on the Oronce? So, you know, we're kind of doing a meta thing, and then we're going back and forth from the 1950s to the present, and we're getting to see everyone's story around the cat's table. So there are a lot of narratives and flashbacks going on. And for our listeners who have seen or read The English Patient and either want to burn it or embrace it, because that gets a lot of emotional response.
It does.
The director of that film said, there is no way you can do a flashback of more than one character. It won't work on film. However, Andache said, this is my story and I'm sticking to it. And this is what I think a lot of people found confusing, because a lot of the characters have flashbacks on screen, but it works. If you don't like to, if you don't want to read it, listen to it, because Andache reads it. I had to read it and listen to it twice.
The English Patient. Yeah,
no, this book.
Oh, The Cat's Table.
Yeah, because I was like, did I just read that? Are we really acrobats in a jungle?
As a book club leader, how often do you do that? Listen to your books on Audible or however you listen?
Well, as I age, I find that I'm using Audible to kind of enhance my experience. I definitely love this sound. You know, I'm big into the tactile, but however you're going to hear a story, I feel reading or listening to a book is a sacred act. It's time you give to yourself. It's therapeutic. It's important. It's part of your routine. It centers you as who you are. So I say, any way you want to read a book, read it. But I have been listening to Audible more and more, but that doesn't take away from that paper, that page, that sound, that turn, the falling asleep, the nodding of the head, the whole thing. I wouldn't trade that for anything.
Yeah, I tend to agree. So it's Stacy's pick for April. The Cat's Table by famed author Michael Anjate. You know him as well from The English Patient. Next month, it'll be Nonfiction Educated by Tara Westover. I look forward to that as well.
Me too.
And if you have suggestions for our book club, email Stacy at bookclub@wjct.org. You can also meet Stacy in person. She conducts live book clubs at the San Marco Books and More every month. So go check that out too. In a moment, popular trivia host Jonathan Oakes, why his podcast Trivial Warfare, straight out of Duval, is taking off worldwide. He'll put us to the trivia test. How will we do? I'm a little nervous. That's next.
Next Fresh Air, Congress in the Trump Era. We talk with Jake Sherman and Anna Palmer, who co-write Politico's newsletter Playbook and have written a new book called The Hill to Die On, The Battle for Congress and the Future of Trump's America. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Next time on The World, Kazimierz Pulaski, the Polish general who helped America win a war with Britain.
The skeleton looks very female.
His bones have been exhumed and analyzed, and they tell a new story.
Intersex people who've been largely erased from any kind of history This is the presence of at least one.
A new legacy for a legendary war hero on the world. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
A new program sends out public alerts when veterans at risk of hurting themselves go missing. But one vet who was found through the system said he felt violated by the experience.
It probably helped find me, but I don't know if it helped me, if that makes sense.
When the right to disappear collides with the desire to save lives. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Outgoing Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen was the public face of immigration policies that included separating families at the border. Her resignation puts more focus on the growing role of White House advisor Stephen Miller. Who's really in charge of immigration? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, what is a popular Jacksonville-based podcast with more than 10,000 listeners per episode worldwide? The answer is Trivial Warfare. Yeah, this locally produced podcast is taking off everywhere. We are so excited to welcome host Jonathan Oakes as he puts myself and David Luckin, our station manager, to the trivia test. Hey, Jonathan, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you. How are you today?
I'm great, thanks. David, I'm a little nervous. I hope we can answer some trivia
questions
here.
I'm more nervous than you. You're going to kill me, Melissa.
No, I don't know about that. Okay, so Jonathan, you're the host of Trivial Warfare. 10,000 plus listeners worldwide. You're one of six podcasts nominated for the Trivia Hall of Fame.
In this case, it's actually not podcasts for the Trivia Hall of Fame. We're up against Regis Philbin and Ann Hagerty and some big names in the trivia world.
How did you get so popular?
You know what? We started the show a couple, 4 years ago, 2015, and we build the show one person at a time, but we put on a pub quiz on a podcast. It's just like going to your local bar where you play and there's teams and there's a host.
Yeah.
The big difference between us and everybody else is that we have fun. We joke. We pick on each other. And so people relate to it. And now we have Jeopardy champions who are paying us to get the chance to come on the show.
Get out of here. That's great. Now, Trivial Warfare is the 2017 and 2018 People's Choice Podcast Award for Games and Hobbies. Wow. So Jonathan really knows what he's doing. So right now, here we go. We're on the hot seat. We're going to join Jonathan's podcast as David Luckin and I attempt to answer his tough trivia questions. Okay, Jonathan, hit us.
All right. We're going to have some fun. So we have two different categories today. We have the state of Florida and we have music. And we're going to alternate between these two categories.
Okay.
Question number one in the category of Florida. 2018 was the first year since 1986 that a Florida senator was defeated while running for re-election. Which former senator lost
Bill
to
Bill Nelson? Oh, David, you
made it. Oh, David. Sorry. That may be the only one I get.
Well done. Question two in music. A megastar in his own right. This singer-songwriter is credited with on many hits for others, including Red Red Wine.
Neil Diamond.
Oh, sorry. You're got killing you me,
sorry,
Luckin.
Sorry. At UB40 also.
Right,
exactly. That's true.
All right. This is back to Florida. The city of Lake Worth had to issue an apology in May of 2018 after sending a power outage notice to citizens indicating that restoration time was uncertain due to extreme activity by what type of paranormal creatures?
Zombies.
Zombies.
Oh. I knew that one. I got one. Yes. Right. Yes. Okay.
They sent out a message saying, hey, we don't know when the power is coming back. There's zombies.
Yes. I remember that vividly. Yeah.
Music. What self-described gypsy is the only woman to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as both
Stevie
an individual? Yes.
Woo.
Way to go.
All right. We're tied now, David.
Tied.
There's a phone call for you in the newsroom, Melissa.
Florida. Tony Khan, son of Jaguars owner Shad Khan, recently became the founder and president of AEW, a new company that will put on what kind of sporting events?
Wrestling.
Yes.
Ooh. Oh.
Killing me. There's
I might
still
have
that
gotten a little assistance from
Culpepper. Is he
the
in your ear?
People across the glass on that one.
Oh,
I actually cheated on
She's
that one.
She's getting help.
Oh, yeah. This is
Michelle
fabulous.
Corum may have helped me on that.
Melissa,
just
take those earphones
bit.
Out. You're getting
I know.
Help.
I know. That really wasn't fair.
All
okay.
right.
Okay.
Although body like this is music. Although Body Like a Back Road is his only Billboard Hot 100 top 10 track, what singer has multiple country number ones, including Leave the Light On, Take Your Time, House Party, and Make You Miss Me?
I have no idea. I'll just say Garth Brooks because it's the only name that comes into my head. I have no idea.
I have no idea.
Oh, what's the answer? Sam Hunt.
Okay.
Oh. Nope.
Very popular country artist. So country is our weakness. I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, that's our weak area
not
for
Sam
sure.
Sam Shepard, Melissa.
Here you go. This is in Florida. A recent internet meme that became very popular on Facebook in recent weeks has users typing what two-word term into a search engine along with their birthday.
Florida Man. Oh,
Florida Man
yes.
is correct.
Yes. Good one. All right. How many more left, Jonathan?
As many as you want.
Oh, we can keep going. It's too bad this show is almost over.
Oh, no, I know.
But I need to let David win. He is, after all, our boss.
Oh, so. No. 3-2. Do you want to go?
We have 1 minute, like 1 minute left.
All right, here we go. Really quickly. What 1992 top 10 Billboard hit from En Vogue starts with a lyric based on the line from a skit in In Living Color? David Alan Greer delivered the line as the character Calhoun
Heather
Tubbs.
Knows. Heather, tell us.
Crickets.
She is saying...
Never gonna get it.
Oh.
Free your mind.
Oh, free your mind and the
free
rest will
your
fall.
Mind.
Remember that song?
Yeah,
David?
Well, our minds were so free we couldn't get it. I'll tell
Got
you that.
Got a little story. Want to tell you about it. Here it goes. Do you have time for one more?
Last one.
Last one.
All right. The 1985 hit song, That's What Friends Are For, was released
Dionne Warwick.
By
okay.
a group Elton labeled John. Dionne Warwick and Friends.
Friends.
I want you to name any two of the three friends.
Elton John.
And?
Oh, who else was in there?
Oh. Ooh.
George Michael, I don't know.
No. Any guesses?
Smokey Robinson.
Stevie Wonder. And Gladys
right.
Knight.
Oh, man.
Those were the two friends.
And Gladys Knight will headline the Jazz Festival. On Memorial Day weekend.
There you go.
So we got
All
some
right.
news into this. Now it's some value.
Jonathan Oakes, host of Trivial Warfare, you have certainly put us to the test. And kudos to all of your international success.
Thank you so much.
Check out Trivial Warfare wherever you get your podcasts. And David,
good
you
fun.
Didn't do too bad.
No, we were okay. I thought
we
I'd
did
do
okay.
worse. You killed it, Melissa.
No, I didn't actually.
That voice
but
in your
you're
ear.
Very kind.
You had a lifeline.
What I did. It was unfair. The sisters
Uh-oh.
Stuck together.
She's showing us a wrap.
One A's up next. See you tomorrow, everybody.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.